Shabbos Perek Chav Gimel Mishnah Hey 23:5, the last of the Perek, and we had finished talking about in the previous Mishnah about considerations for a mace, a person who died. So we'll discuss more about that here in this Mishnah. And to understand the Mishnah, the main focal point here is the issue of Muktza and the fact that the corpse is considered to be Muktza in as much as it has no Shabbos. And that being the case, Muktz items, one cannot move the corpse on Shabbos. Now, just make sure you understand the halachas of Muktzah properly. Touching Muktzah is not forbidden, unless it will necessarily make it, you know, roll away or something. But to simply touch Muktzah is not an issue, not a problem. It's the moving of Muktzah that's a problem. And therefore, as we take care of the mace, we're allowed to take care of its needs. We just have to be careful not to move it. Therefore, the Mishnah says, Osin kol tzarche hameis. You can do and take care of all the various needs of someone who has died. That kol, all the needs, are coming to add, besides what we'll say explicitly in the Mishnah, other things like, for example, they were accustomed, if a person dies on a Shabbos, Rachmana Litzlan, so then they can't be buried till the next day. So we need to protect the body from a decomposition as well as disgrace. So one of the things that they did is they would block up the orifices of the body so that air shouldn't get in, etc. So that would be allowed to be done on Shabbos. That's the kol. And also, sachin umadichin oso. You can anoint with oil or rinse with cool water the body. Again, the idea here is you're keeping the body cool in various ways, and that way that will retard the decomposition of the body, or in case of the anointing, if it could start to smell, etc. Ublavad shlo yazizu bo aver, provided that when one does anoint or wash the body, he doesn't pick up an arm or move a leg or something like that. Shomtin esakar mitachtav. Similarly, you're allowed to remove the mattress from beneath the corpse. Umatilan oso ala chol bishvil shiyamtin. And you can also remove what's keeping the body warm, meaning the bedding, and place the body directly onto the floor so that it could stay cool. The word yamtin actually it means one of two things. Either it means so it'll wait, meaning it will last, meaning retarding decomposition. It could be that it's related to the word metuna with an aleph at the end. That's an Aramaic word that's referring to dampness, meaning that you cool off the body with the damp floor, again, keeping it cool. So either hamtana, waiting, or mituna, moistening. Either way, the point is we're cooling off the body, keeping it cool to retard decomposition. Importantly, you're allowed to move the mattress beneath the corpse, even though the corpse, of course, is going to move then, because that would be tiltum and hatzad, indirect movement, which is allowed. But it's important that mattress is not a basis, the davar asur, not a basis for muktza, meaning if the person had died before Shabbos, or his the body was placed onto the mattress before Shabbos, so then, just as the corpse itself is muktzah, the mattress beneath it would be muktzah as well and couldn't be moved. So the case here is, let's say, where the person died on Shabbos. So then going into Shabbos, the mattress is not a basis. So when the person dies, it remains not a basis, and therefore the mattress could be moved. Okay. Also, koshnes alechi, one can bind up the jawbone. The idea here is if the jaw is starting to sag, one could take a bandana or something and secure it on the head so that it doesn't fall further. The concern being that having this gaping open mouth would be a disgrace to the deceased. Lo shiale, we're not allowed to bind the jaw so that the mouth recloses. That would be disallowed. I'm lifting it up because that's the muktzah issue. Elish lo yosef, the issue is simply that you can prevent the jaw from opening further and therefore the mouth being that much more agape. V'chein, and similarly, now we're going to go for a moment away from taking care of corpses, but on the same principle of, securing the jaw so it doesn't open further but not raising it. Similarly, kora shenishbara, if one has a ceiling joist in his house which is broken, is cracked, and the concern is now that the supporting beams are breaking, or supporting beam has broken, we're concerned that if the joist falls, then the whole ceiling could cave on in. So therefore, we're going to prevent that from happening. You can take an object like a safsal as a bench, or a rucha samita like the side of a bed, and stand it up so that you now essentially are effectively propping up the ceiling so it won't fall again. Now, when I say propping up the ceiling, I want to make sure that's clear what we're doing here. First of all, as the Mishnah says, lo shetale. Certainly you can't actually make the joist go back up again, because that's the muktzah issue. For starters, at least muktzah. Elish lo tosif, you just are putting this this piece of wood, whatever it is, it must be an item that's not muktzah, like a bench, but you're putting there so that the joist shouldn't sag further, just preventing it from sagging further. Now, if you'd actually be jamming the bench snugly into the joist, so you'd have a few problems. First of all, if it actually is now fixed in place, you could have a problem of bone altogether, of construction. But even if not, you still have the, if you put it in a way that you can't pull it back out again, you'd at least have a rabbinic problem of bitul kli mehechano. If you recall back to the third parak, Mishnah Gimel, I believe, we had talked about how you can't put a plate beneath a dripping lamp to catch the drips, because that would be called bitul kli mehechano. You've made a usable plate which wasn't mukta now, and so essentially so much you can't move because of the mukta on it, and that we said is like a isser all to itself, analogous to we said either bona also, like you're like cementing it down to the floor where it can't be moved, or soser, you're destroying it, whatever the case, whatever the rationale is, there's a separate rule that one can't take a useful non-mukta object and essentially make it unmovable, bitul kli mehechano. So if that would be happening here, if you would be taking the bench and propping it in such a way that you can't move it anymore without the ceiling falling down again or falling further. So what we're talking about here is you're putting it beneath the cracked beam, but you're putting it in a way that it's a little loose. So the point again is that being that it's currently loose, when you put it in, if there be any further falling, that bench or the side of the bed would support the joist from falling down and your roof would stay, preventing from caving in. Okay, now back to taking care of a deceased person on Shabbos. Ein ma'amtzin es ha-meis b'Shabbos. You can't, the word actually you would think would be ma'atzmen, like otzem enayim means like to close one's eyes. So it's the same, the letters have been switched from the tani of the mem switched around, but it's the same idea. You can't close the eyes of a person who's passed away. That is the Jewish custom. We don't leave the eyes open. That's certainly true. We saw that Yosef closed Yaakov's eyes, etc. But on Shabbos, we don't do that. First and foremost, as we just said, there's the muktzah issue, and the eyelids are also a limb, and therefore they're muktzah, they can't be moved. But as we'll see in a moment, we're also concerned about actually expediting the death of the person, and that also be even a worse problem. And then muktzah, certainly, as the Mishnah will say, v'lo b'chol im yitzias ha-nefesh. You can't even close a person who is in the throes of death, even on a weekday, you can't close their eyes, because, again, that could, it's like he's almost dead, but not quite dead. And the rule is that someone who's a goses, whose life is flickering out of him, but he's still alive. So he's still alive, 100% alive. And you can't curtail his life even by an instant. So by closing the eyes, that could let out the last bit of energy he has or use up his energy, and that would be bringing the death forward, which would be tantamount, as the Mishnah will say, it's tantamount to actually killing him. God forbid. And therefore the Mishnah says, v'hama'amet im yitzias ha-nefesh, one who does close the eyes of a person as he's dying, hareza shofech damim, the person who closed the eyes of the mace is as if he is killing him. He's spilling blood, because, like I said before, you're expediting the death to be that much sooner. Just as an aside before I end the parak here, this is certainly halach l'maisa. Everything said in the Mishnah is halach l'maisa. I remember in my rabbinic finishing school, Yitzhak Berkowitz warned us, when you're taking care of someone who is on their deathbed, you have to be careful even about asking them to say vidui, because again, they may be physically, in the Mishnah, if someone's physically using his last bit of energy to keep his eyes open, perhaps, but certainly if a person loses hope, then even that emotional deflation could expedite the bring on of death. And the concern is that if you'd say a person essentially conveying the message that their time is now up, and that's what they should say, vidui, while they still have the chance, that could make them lose all hope and then expedite the death, which in itself would be a problem. So we'd be very sensitive at end-of-life issues to make sure that one doesn't necessarily bring forth the time of death, because that would be, like I said before, and the Mishnah says, tantamount to actually killing the person, God forbid.